You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to CivCast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Valter. Hello, Valter.
Hello, Kyle. It's finally here. We've been waiting so long.
I know. Oh, my goodness. Well, we were so confused of when this expansion pack was actually going to launch when it didn't come out at E3 news last year. We were like, well, maybe it's going to be a whole other year. But it's not. It is February, and we have our hands on the Rise and Fall expansion. Valter, what are your first thoughts?
Oh, man. I'm happy. I am really happy.
I admit it really kind of got me re-energized for the game, just to have something fresh and new just to play with. Really liking a lot of the little nuance tweaks even to it. I mean, I found the timeline very interesting. We've got governors in our hands. I experienced an emergency. What else do we have, Valter? There's other things.
Well, the new alliance system, I've been playing around with that. For example, the whole Golden Age system, which is really interesting, for example. There's a lot in there that actually is really well integrated into the game, and I find really interesting.
I have not had too many experiences with alliances yet. I did in my very first game, so let's dive into this. We're going to talk a little bit. The main episode today, we're going to be talking about the new civilizations that got added to the game. But in our start of this, we're going to kind of talk about our thoughts on the expansion, just generally, and what sort of games we've played. For this one, I started as England, just to get a baseline. You guys know I love England. Not such a fan after that nerf. I kind of feel that they're neutered a little bit. Like, they went from being a civ that had a purpose to a bland civ again. They fell back into minutia for me. So they're just in the pile of playable civs that I just don't care to play anymore.
I haven't tried as England yet. And did you really found that the +4 loyalty with the Royal Navy Dockyard is actually useful or not so much?
So with the game I was in, I didn't even get to the point of settling on another continent because of how the map. I just did a basic continents map, and I was just surrounded by my own continent. So I wasn't getting any real big bonus for it. But now at the Royal Navy Dockyard and the commercial, the commercial hub don't really work together. That was weird to me. Especially because you get the bonus, that trifecta bonus of having your capital, the harbor, and the commercial hub adjacent. But at the same time, I was like, well, what do I build? And I actually found that I lost out on a lot by building Royal Navy Dockyards, just because I was getting a bunch of great admirals where others were getting great merchants. So that was a little bit disheartening. I want to take it a little bit further. At the same time, I was kind of like, I really want to play with a new civ that just came out. But it just felt like they fell back into the closet of, you know, oh, okay, you're a civ, but you're not really a great civ to play.
They became mediocre again instead of being really great.
Yes, which I'm not, you know, yelling that Firaxis needs to make England great again, but no, they did lose their edge, and therefore I chose a sharper sword to play as. So my next game was with Poundmaker, and I had a lot of fun with that last night. The trade route stuff was cool. You guys know I like the economic thing, so that was really fun. Missed out on the Colossus Wonder. I was really trying to go trade routey and, you know, those. But it was fun. Who's the civ? I already told you, and I already forgot his name. I took the capital of
Mapuche is a civilization, and Lautaro is the leader.
Mapuche and Lautaro. Okay, I'm going to try and remember him. but I took his capital. That was fun. Kind of pushed him back. We were doing the archipelago map. Someone, I think it was Tal Rainer from the CivCast stuff, recommended that I try that. Is that a new map type?
I believe we had that one before already.
We had Fractal, but people in chat were saying, I was streaming it on Twitch, everybody, and they were saying that Archipelago was a new type.
Yeah, no, it is actually a new type. We had it in previous iteration, but in this this Civ 6, it's actually new indeed. I should try that one.
So they did not lead me astray. It was interesting, Valter. I know against Twitch consensus, they backed me up on this. The people that were there were like, Kyle, just restart this one. You are in a bad starting location. And I was like, okay, only if you guys approve. And they're like, restart this one. You're in a bad location. So three restarts later, we were in a good spot. Two of those three, Mapuche was on the same continent. We're on the same landmass together. They're really trying to get me to be a better Civ person, Valter. They're trying to get me to get more settlers out of the gate. Overall, it was a blast playing with people on Twitch, and I think we're gonna definitely organize some sort of multiplayer game that's gonna be really low stress, like try out new leaders, you know, just to goof around with one another.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yes. How was your first couple days in the land of Civilization VI Rise and Fall?
Actually, really good. I started out with Georgia Tamar and. Because I wanted to try the Golden Age system and I want to really focus on that in my first game. And Georgia has the ability that when you get like your Golden Age dedication, you still get the same like bonuses to your Golden Age score if you didn't have a Golden Age. So with her, it's really a lot easier to keep chaining Golden Ages after each other, which I did. And that was awesome. I loved it so much. Which did spoil me a little bit, because when I did the next game, I believe it was, oh yeah, it was the Dutch. I was like, why am I not getting so many Golden Ages after each other anymore? Oh. I want the more Golden Ages and everything like that. But I like the Dutch. They're less awesome than I had hoped they would be. The Grote Rivieren, which translates as Great Rivers, bonus is less good than I hoped it would have been. But yeah, still, I love the Polders. They're beautiful, and I love that they actually change over time as well. So that's really great.
I'd love to try the Dutch. That was actually what my two contemplations last night was: Poundmaker or the Dutch. Those were the ones I was going to play. So I'm glad I kind of went a different route.
Yeah, I also had a game as the Kree Poundmaker. I love their unique improvement as well, the Mekwap.
Yes,
it's pretty good. Question. And also the fact that their scout starts with a free promotion and it is actually pretty strong is really awesome. I love it.
Does the Mekawop, does that count as an adjacency bonus for the industrial zone, or do you need a mine? I was trying to test it and got too distracted with Twitch.
I'm pretty sure it does not count for the, I think you need a mine.
Because I did half and half, because I was trying to do an experiment, but then with chat, I just got too distracted to like follow it through. But that's interesting. I figured it would be the mine, but I was like, I want my housing, but I want my mine, you know.
Yeah.
Debate.
And my last game that I did was with Shaka, and Shaka is just a beast.
Is he?
Yeah, he really is. I just beelined as quickly as I can to get the Ikanda, his unique replacement for the encampment. Mm-hmm. And after that, just went straight for the Impi. And just steamrolled a lot of civilizations with their really powerful things while focusing my nation on culture by itself so that I could get the civics that would allow him to get his corps in armies. Because you can create corps from mercenary civic and armies from nationalism. And he himself adds an additional 5 base combat strength to both corps and armies. So they really, really get a lot stronger. Those Impies just bash through things.
So I'm very curious to play as Shaka. And this is going to be a great day for you to kind of line me up, team me up for who I'm going to play as next, because we're gonna focus on these new Civ leaders today, the cultures and leaders and civilizations, all that.
Yes.
So I know you kind of just gave a brief overview, but do you want to start with Shaka? Let's just roll right into talking about these new leaders.
Yeah, sure. So Shaka has his unique replacement for the encampment is the Ikanda, which gives 1 housing, which is actually really useful because in the beginning of the game, housing can be a really big problem for you. You build your granary. You don't really want to build an aqueduct usually if your city already has fresh water. And the Ikanda providing one housing and a barracks and stuff also providing one housing actually really helps with growing your empire a lot easier. Mm. Also, you can get faster cores and army creation when you unlock them. And because Shaka has the special ability, you can form cores at Mercenary Civ and armies at Nationalism. You will be pushing out cores and armies a lot faster than anybody else.
Wow.
And that's really strong because he adds, like I said, another 5 base combat strength to both cores and army.
Wow.
So the Impi, his unique replacement for Pikeman, which is still in a dead-end tech, usually not worth getting, but for Shaka, it is a must get because the Impis are really, really powerful. They have the same base strength as a Pikeman, but they are a lot cheaper to build. They are 125 production instead of 200 on standard speed, which also means upgrading your Spearmen to Impis costs only 100 gold on standard speed. So you can pre-build a lot of Spearmen and then just upgrade a massive army of Impis. They have increased flanking bonus. Their maintenance is only 1 gold per turn instead of 3 for the pikemen. Whoa. And they earn XP faster.
Wow. I mean, just the cheapness of that unit is impressive. Is this serving as a... I see the Civilpedia calls it a warrior regiment. So is this not an anti-cav? This is a...
It is an anti-cav, and they follow the anti-cav promotion list as well.
Okay.
Which is the only big downside, in my opinion. But it has also a +1 movement in there, and you go quite quickly through the promotions and everything like that. So it works.
Okay, good.
And what's also really cool, if you have unlocked the Civic for it to get cores or armies, mm-hmm. when your unit captures a city, it immediately upgrades to a core or army if possible.
Whoa.
So you want to spread around which units you take a city with, use your cores to break down a city, and then your unit that isn't core yet, just take that city when it's almost down, and bam, it's upgraded and got just like 10 extra strength on it.
Wow. Okay. I really wanted to try Shaka. Shaka sounds fantastic to play as. Definitely your major warrior civ. So that one game I rolled with England, I had both Genghis Khan and Shaka in there. And people were like, that seems like a problem. Little did they know, I also had the new aggressive man that takes up the helm of India, which is... Who leads India?
Chandragupta!
Who was on a different continent, but they're like, thank God, Kyle. If he was near you, you would, game over. Okay.
So, I had the luck because the Impis are still anti-cav units.
Uh-huh.
So I had both Chandragupta, I had Tomyris, and I had Genghis Khan as my close neighbors,
Ooh.
Which are all really focused on cav units.
Yes.
So my units were really, really powering through them really easily.
That is super effective that you had that happen. Wow.
Yeah, that was really, really lucky.
So we got Chandragupta with Rise and Fall, who is the secondary leader to Gandhi over there. I almost Genghis Khan on the mind, but counter to Gandhi, so not so pacifist in his approach. What's his agenda? Is what to have his neighbors be
have
far
you
away.
Far away. Mm. If you're close to him, he doesn't like you. But if you're far away, he's fine. Like because everybody who's close to him, he wants to like take over.
And
which is also part of his ability very much.
Bingo. So. I was going to say, he benefits from that. He gets +2 movement and +5 combat strength for the first 10 turns after declaring a war of territorial expansion. So when he gets tired of you on the border, he gets a bonus.
Yeah, and he gets it really quickly with military training, which is one of the earlier civics you unlock. It's around the line of political philosophy, if I'm not wrong. So it's an ability you get really quickly.
Wow.
And +2 movement, a +5 combat is really, really powerful, especially if you combine that with Varu, who is already in a really powerful unit. You can just swamp over your enemies really quickly in the beginning.
Ooh, okay, so that's a lot. So you guys, the Varro, is that the same? That stuff shared with, the Varro and the Stepwell.
Yeah, the rest is all shared with India because that's their, like, nation bonus.
Right.
And the movement speed and combat strength is just specifically for Chandragupta.
I see here. Okay. Anything else you want to throw into Chandragupta before we take a look at a different leader? Because most of that is shared, like you said.
No, not so much. He's a really aggressive leader when I encountered him in the game. He was close to me, so we weren't good friends. But since I had the correct units to counter him, I didn't have much problems against him. Varus are still a pain in the ass to deal with, even if you have anti-cav units, but they're way more doable if you have impies.
Yeah, you really sound like you lucked out in that one. I was gonna say they warned me, stay far, far away. I was like, okay, I got this. I can hide when need be. Who do you want to tackle next here, Valter? We've got a lot of good leaders.
Let's go over to Genghis Khan, I think. Returning once again to the Sith series. I believe he has been in every one of them, which is only a handful of leaders are in every iteration so far. But he, with his Mongolian horde, all cavalry units gain +3 combat strength and a chance to capture defeated enemy cavalry class units, which is really cool if you go up against somebody who uses a lot of cav units like Chandragupta or Tumiris or those kinds of people.
So there's a chance to capture defeated cavalry units, you say?
Yes.
So that's interesting. That really kind of changes his... Well, I don't want to say changes his gameplay, but yeah, if you're up against another cav-heavy Civ, he could really benefit a lot from a war. Wow.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Just the fact that you can capture those units makes so much stronger, because you could literally get a free unit out of that. That's a lot of production. You can...
Yeah.
You can, and all of a sudden, you literally have an extra unit on the front line ready to fight for you. Really powerful ability.
I'm guessing that's why, you know, hence his washing over other countries in this way, that, you know, he can just
probably
really go and steal those units. So that's going to be fascinating. So what are we looking at here for special units from him? A special unit, and we got a unique, what's this thing here?
A unique building it is.
The Keshig, is that it?
Is that Keshig, I think that is it, yes.
Oh, classified as a... Keshig is his ranged cavalry unit. It uses the ranged unit's promotion table. What are we looking at here? 40 ranged strength, attack range
decent.
Of 2, 4 movement, 3 maintenance. What stands out about the Keshig here? Just high movement?
What it can do, and it's a special ability that it has, it can escort civilian units and support units. And then those units use the Keshig's movement speed. So they can get an extra bonus out of that. Combining that with their unique building, the Ordu, which grants an ability that gives +1 movement to heavy and light cavalry trained in the city. I haven't played as Genghis yet, but I assume it would also count for the Keshig. I'm not completely certain about that, unfortunately. But if that is the case, then you have 4 movement on your Orkesh unit, which is a lot, and you can use that to, for example, in peace times, escort your builders or settlers around the map and just go super quickly with those.
Wow.
And in wartime, just bring a battering ram or a siege tower or something like that quickly to the front lines with a Keshig unit.
That's really cool. Just that increased movement from him makes me almost really want to, so Shaka sounds great, but something about this increased movement speed makes me want to do this. Rev mentions in chat here, escorting the siege towers.
Yeah, siege towers have been nerfed, but Genghis is really an early warfare Civ. In that point, siege towers are really strong still. So yeah, definitely escorting those siege towers will be big use of the Keshig. But I personally just love the fact that even in peacetime, they are useful for escorting your builders and your settlers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think not a lot of people would go and use that immediately that way, but I find that a big boon that you should be using because it is really powerful having extra. I usually always have the extra movement policy, the military policy up in my games specifically for my my own units, my civilian units, because it is so much easier when your builders go around with 1 extra speed across your empire. Because usually you'll be improving stuff all over your empire, and having that extra movement just literally saves you time and makes you more efficient because you get the bonus quicker.
This idea of just escorting people alone. I mean, I want to play him for that. Gosh, Mongolia. Are you happy with the implementation of Genghis in this, Valter? Do you think it was well done overall?
I think so. Also, the fact that his trade routes immediately created trading posts in the destination city, which is quite interesting, because that means if you want to, you can send one trade route towards a city somewhere far away, mm-hmm. and immediately send another trade route that can benefit from the trading post being there already. That's useful.
That is.
Beyond that, you receive extra level of diplomatic visibility, which is not the best thing ever. France would like it, because France likes their agenda as diplomatic visibility and stuff like that.
Right.
But you also get extra combat bonuses if you have a higher diplomatic visibility than your enemy in their territory, which would really help with your training post there. So before you invade somebody, scout them out with a couple of training posts, declare war, your traders will immediately come back, because the trade routes are valid again, you can send them elsewhere, and then you have really high diplomatic visibility with them and gain extra combat bonus against.
That sounds fantastic. Okay, just putting it out there, Valter, Genghis sounds like he's high up in the charts of who I play next. Just as a...
Oh yeah, I think it would be really interesting. He's also somebody I really would like to play a game as. I haven't gotten into it yet, but definitely we'll try that soon.
Yes, and we'll have to get your report back. Kind of going down this list here, I'm seeing Scotland next in my little list. So we've got Robert the Bruce of Scotland, yeah.
Yes.
What are we looking at here? Scottish Enlightenment is happy cities receive an additional plus 5% science and plus 5% production. Happy cities generate plus 1 great scientist point per campus and plus 1 great engineer point per industrial zone. Ecstatic cities
double
the amounts. So yeah. I might struggle with this because I don't know how happy my people are all the time.
Well, the thing is with Scotland, the thing you want to do is focus on building the Colosseum really quick.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
A
golf course helps. You can have only one golf course per city. It's plus one amenity, and by itself, it's not that amazing. Mm. Unless you want to go for a cultural game or something like that. But with the Scottish Enlightenment, going for a science victory makes a lot of sense. You get this great scientist and the great engineers, which are both super useful for a science victory. The production and science itself also really helps for a science victory. So there are a lot of things that steer you towards a science victory with him. And the golf course, yeah, it adds one amenity if it is like in the correct place, I believe.
Interesting. Yeah, the golf course, I didn't realize that was only one per city. I mean, I guess you don't want a city with like 40 golf courses going on. But, you know, it's still... So plus one amenity, plus two gold, plus one appeal, plus one culture adjacent to city center, plus one culture adjacent to an entertainment complex. I initially, hearing about the golf course, assumed it was a thing for the entertainment complex already. Didn't realize it was a builder improvement.
Yeah, it's a unique improvement for him.
Interesting.
It's fine. It's not the best. The extra amenity is good, especially because you want your cities to be happy. But I would just say go focus on building something like the Colosseum, which will grant a lot of happiness to a lot of cities. It's probably more powerful, and you can add it up with some golf courses if necessary.
Well, that makes sense. And then moving on to their military here, they get the Highlander as a unique recon unit of the Scottish civilization, and it replaces the Ranger.
Yeah.
Exciting.
The Ranger, I've never really used that much, unfortunately, so I'm not sure how great that's going to be. But the Highlander has some potential. It also gets extra strength when fighting on hills and forest terrain. So if you have one of those cities that is surrounded by forest or hills, you can probably use the Highlander for that. I think if I play Scotland, that having a couple of Highlanders could be useful, especially because they still use the scout's promotion tree, which means like the movement through hills and forests could be really quickly and stuff like that. So there could be some really like cool and fast, kind of guerrilla units. I would kind of describe them as
right,
but I'm not entirely sure how amazing they are, especially because they are also ranged units.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't sound fantastic to me, but, you know, I'll tell you when I see one in-game, I guess. I don't think I'll be playing as... Nothing about Scotland really appeals to me. I mean, maybe... maybe just the Scottish Enlightenment bonus, if I can keep my cities happy with the extra science and production.
It is really, really powerful.
That sounds
just
great.
That ability makes Scotland a really powerful civ already, because that is just so powerful to have.
And I guess
plus two scientists and plus two great engineers for each industrial and campus for the cities that are happy or that are ecstatic.
Uh-huh.
That by itself is already really good. Adding another 10% science and production is really, really powerful.
Are we playing Scotland wide or tall, Valter?
Personally would still go wide, because I believe with everything that's still in the game, going wide is the way to go. I would be a bit more tricksy to keep your happiness up and running, but that just play a peaceful game, trade your resources well with all the other players and everything like that, and you should have no problem.
Great. Because he seems like he's pretty set to do, what, a science victory there. Is that right?
Yeah, I really point him towards a science victory, and a really good contender for being one of the best at that one as well.
Awesome. Moving down further on... Well, I guess I have to move up now, because we're going in my list in weird order here.
Technically didn't talk about his special ability himself.
Oh, yeah, what's his?
The Bannockburn. And can declare a war of liberation after gaining the defensive tactic civic, which is quite early. Plus 100 production and plus 2 movement for the first 10 turns after declaring a war of liberation.
Interesting.
It is something similar that we have seen with John Curtin from Australia.
Yes.
But it's a little bit more tricksy to get, I think. Because the War of Liberation, you need to have a specific target for that you can go and liberate. Well, usually the AI is really aggressive with taking city states, I've noticed. So that might not be the most difficult part. But yeah, you can just, if you wanted some more production for 10 turns, just declare a war of liberation on somebody, enjoy the production, and play defensively or something like that. You don't necessarily have to go and take the cities and just enjoy the bonus that it has. The plus 2 movement is always good for everything and everybody.
Right.
So yeah.
Huh. But that's interesting.
I don't think I would use it so much as an offensive.
So never, the AI will never attack his neighbor civilizations unless they break a promise with him and dislikes anyone waging war on them. Likes civilizations not at war with their neighbors. So, or his neighbors, I should say. So, good if you have him. Great trading partner if he winds up being your neighbor. But
yeah,
make a possibly a military alliance with him. I don't know, some sort of alliance.
Yeah, I definitely science? Would want some sort of alliance. Science and alliance would probably be really good, because he probably has some techs that you don't have, depending on, of course, what difficulty you play and how far ahead you are and everything like that. But
right.
Because you don't want him to profit too much from you.
Right. No, we definitely don't want that. So seems like a solid, not someone I want to play, but someone I wouldn't mind having as a neighbor.
Exactly.
Although I would, you know, I think the interesting thing for him is definitely back to the actual Scottish Enlightenment again. You know, if you can get those
really
cities
powerful.
Happy, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Who do you want to hit next, Valter? I've got Mapuche. Sorry.
The Mapuche with Lautaro.
Yeah. Do you want to do them next?
Sure.
Okay.
So the Swift Hawk is Lautaro's special ability.
Uh-huh.
If one of his units defeats an enemy unit within the borders of the enemy city, that city loses 20 loyal.
Oh my.
So that plays really bigly into the loyalty system. It used to be in the earlier preview editions, it used to be 5 loyalty or something like that, but it opted big time.
Wow. So yeah, if you're killing units in your borders, your cities are losing a lot of loyalty, huh?
Yeah, the problem with it though is I'm not sure how useful it is. Because if you kill too many units of him, then the city will become a free city instead. And I believe they actually spawn some units for that as well. So I'm not really... I haven't played as him yet, so I'm not sure. But that sounds like something really difficult you need to juggle with.
Right. Okay, so we're not as sold, not as good as it sounds, possibly.
Yeah.
I got all my Scottish things up here. Oops, sorry, everybody. Let's see what else next. So,
all units trained in cities with an established governor gain 25% more experience in combat, 10 more combat strength bonus against civilizations that are in Golden Age.
Interesting. That sounds nice. All units trained in cities established governor 25% more experience, plus 10 combat strength bonus against civilization. The Golden Age aspect of that's not selling me.
I actually am not sold on either of them. The 25% more experience in combat is nice.
Yeah.
But it's not like that you say it's overpowered or anything like that.
Right.
It's not doing that much for me. And the one in the Golden Age, yeah, that's nice, but then you're so dependent on the person you want to declare war at is in the Golden Age or being declared war against is in the Golden Age. It's not that amazing.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't know how to pronounce that thing, the Tokoi or whatever it is. Tokui. I'm so bad at Native American pronunciations, but
yeah, I'm not an expert either.
Not a fan of that. Moving along to his Milan Raider. That's probably not even how you say that one. But sure. So this is a unique light cavalry unit. Its abilities or attributes, it gets plus 5 combat strength within 4 tiles of friendly territory, and it uses less movement to pillage. Again, okay.
It's, again, not that... That's spectacular.
No, really underwhelming.
It's okay.
I guess you're defending your borders with it because it's the friendly territory within 4 tiles of when you get the 5 combat strength.
Yeah, or just some cities that are really close on your border that you can attack. But all in general, it's not amazing.
Okay. Well, I'm good to move along. I'm really underwhelmed. Oh, good. Another name. Chamamul. Got nailed it. It's a unique tile improvement, and its effects are provides culture equal to 75% of its tile's appeal.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not a fan either.
Must be built on a tile with an appeal of breathtaking or more.
Yes. So that breathtaking or more is 4, I believe, breathtaking.
Yes, correct.
So with that means you get 3 culture out of it. And culture is good, but man, usually those styles, I probably build something different.
He feels very lost in terms of perks. For this civilization,
it's a bit scattered.
Things. I again throw him back into the closet. He's that sort of unnotable civilization that sit down with England there. Anything else?
Oh no, I would place England higher.
Okay, fair enough. For me, I have to say there's a certain limit in my mind, Valter, that I should have said this, that if you don't hit a certain threshold, I'd say 75% of the civilizations we have now. Just at some point for me, roughly speaking, 75% are bleh, and then the other 25% are little notable people. I fear that, just the more civilizations you add to a game, as fun as it makes it, it's probably harder for Firaxis to be like, you're notable for this, and you're notable for that, because, the game only has so many ways things happen.
People have been saying before already that Firaxis went the kind of Dota 2 way. Make everything overpowered so nothing is overpowered. But civilizations like this then really stand out because they are not that much overpowered at all. And because of that, then they become
You're right, though. If we're looking at one of those like those old lists we used to see of ranking the leaders in terms of strength, I agree. This whole civilization falls well under England in that way. It just at least England can pop cities on other continents, retain them better, and get military units out of it. This guy,
free units. The Royal Navy Dockyard is not the worst either. The British Museum is actually really good. So England definitely has some things going for them. Well, this nation is Yeah. what you want to do with them.
That's right. I'm not sure. We're at 30-some minutes here in the show. We've got a couple more leaders to get through. Let's. Do you want to try and do the rest of them? We've got Korea, Georgia, the Dutch, and the Cree, technically. I don't know if we're going to get through all four of them this week.
Oh, we can just try that.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to start with?
Let's do Korea, because we haven't talked about Korea yet this show. So
we haven't, and Korea is once again really, really powerful. I didn't get to play with them yet, because I want to save them for like when I start playing like on Deity fully again. Mm-hmm. I want to just start with them at Deity. Right now, I've been playing a low difficulty, just getting feel for the game and everything like that. And Korea sounds like a really powerful Civ as well. Starting with a plus 10 culture and plus 10 science in all cities with an established governor. So you just want to have all the governors.
Yeah.
And place one in all the different cities. And that's awesome.
That is. So go wide with your governors, not tall.
Yes, definitely. And then build Sewongs everywhere, which is their unique campus district. And it has plus 4 science. Flat.
I am very interested in playing as Korea as well. So we got the three kingdoms, which mines receive plus 1 science. If there is an adjacent Siwong district, receive plus 1 science if there is an adjacent Siwong district. Farms receive bonus food if there is an adjacent Siwong district. So you're getting a science from mines next to their unique improvement and next an extra food from farms if next to it.
Yeah, and just the plus 4 for a science district, like, unless you're settling close to a mountain range that has the right kind of things, you will not go over plus 4 ever. The only downside, it has to be built on a hill, and not every city might have a hill. But beyond that, you just literally want to build a Sewon in every city that you have. Because the plus 4, you also get the 10% extra if you have a governor there. You can build more science buildings in there. You will have a lot of great scientist points, and great scientists are great and awesome. You will literally just fly through the trajectory.
Yeah, so they get their Siwon is the unique district for their campus replacement. It must be built on hills. -1 penalty to science for each adjacent district tile. So don't build districts next to them.
That is the only big downside of them, but I think that is a very manageable one.
Specialists add plus 2 science each, plus 1 great scientist point per turn, receives a standard bonus of plus 1 to science yield for each adjacent mountain tile, and minor bonuses of a half for each adjacent rainforest tile. That's standard, right? Is that the standard?
I didn't even know they actually get that, because it literally just lists here as plus 4 science bonus in the game itself.
Oh, interesting. Well, maybe there's a discrepancy from the wiki here.
That might be a thing.
That might be a copy paste of a standard science thing.
I know that they have changed it from preview build to the final build as well, so it might be something like that.
Yeah.
And what has been said in chat, Korea is broken. You can get over 120 science per turn by the medieval era, which is absolutely true. They are a science beast.
That also makes me want to play them a little bit, Valter. They're getting up there next to Genghis.
Yeah, he says that with the Dark Age policy, if you manage to time it correctly and get into a Dark Age, you can go for insanely massive science for that.
That is crazy.
And that is a strategy that you can go for. Strategically place yourself in Dark Age at the exact right moment, gain a lot of bonuses from that, and push yourself in Heroic Age after that for the 3 Golden Age dedications. It's definitely a very, very interesting strategy that I really want to play around with, because that sounds really powerful.
That really does. Now, moving on, they got a unique ranged unit as well, the Hwacha. Okay. And this one is kind of a fire chariot sort of thing, and it upgrades the machine gun, making it replace what exactly?
It replaces the field cannon, I think.
Right. It doesn't say here in the wiki, but yeah, I think you're right.
It might be that it actually doesn't replace anything. It just puts itself in there as an extra unit, but It is in that kind of territory, because it is a kind of a different unit. It has some similarities with a siege unit, because it cannot move and attack in the same turn.
Ah.
But beyond that, it's a pretty good unit. It has a really high ranged combat strength.
Yeah,
I know. And that just adds really toward her civilization thing, I think. Is play a big science game, play defensively, mm-hmm. put your Huachas ready to attack any invading army, not necessarily attack with them, mm-hmm. because on the defensive, they are really powerful. They have really high strength. You're not going to move them anyway, because you have them in your cities, your campuses, on hills and whatever, already stationed, mm-hmm. and just blast your enemies away.
That's cool. Oh, they'd be a really fun science civ for that reason. So we building, I mean, I know you kind of laid it out already that we're going wide with most all civs is your recommendation, but she definitely sounds like a go wide from her.
At least have 8 cities and have a governor in each of them.
Okay, there you go. Because your bonus, you're getting massive bonuses from each of her Siwon. This is great. I really want to play as Korea now.
Yes.
Moving on, in the urgency of time. Georgia, you want to talk about Tamar?
Yeah, like I said before, Tamar is really great for chaining Golden Ages, because mm-hmm. normally when you get a Golden Age, you get an extra like boost, something really powerful that you can profit from your civilization, but you do not get the normal age dedication bonus that will allow you to get extra points towards a Golden Age or whatever anymore. Mm-hmm. With Tamar, you can still do that. Even though you make the Golden Age dedication, you also receive the normal age bonus towards improving your era score. So it really keeps chaining on your Golden Ages. I believe I was eventually at 4 Golden Ages chained after each other because of that reason.
Wow.
Their wool replacement is pretty okay. It replaces the Renaissance wools, which is the latest version of wools. It gives extra tourism, and for that fight some extra faith. They get 100% extra faith for 10 turns after declaring a protectorate war. And each envoy you send to a city-state of your majority religion counts as 2 envoys. So that is pretty powerful. And with that, you can... she's pretty catered towards religious game as well. Yep. I won a religious victory with her as well, which was pretty cool. I like to see how the religious game changed the new patch. It did a bit. She can be really powerful in that way. The plus 100% fate for 10 turns is actually really, really useful if you want to go for religious victory.
She sounds cool. Not really my cup of tea, but definitely sounds like a civ worth playing.
Yeah, her unique unit isn't that amazing. The Keshur, it has plus 7 combat strength bonus when fighting in hill terrain. No movement penalty in hill terrain. It's useful, but not amazing.
Yeah, that sounds a little underwhelming.
But then again, like it's kind of the same thing with Scotland. Like Scotland has a couple of things that are pretty cool, but the Scottish Enlightenment is the thing that really does it for them. And with Georgia, it's the strength and unity. The dedication for Golden Age that you also receive normal age bonus, that is really, really powerful. And that's where her strength comes.
Cool. Anything else you want to tack on to Georgia here?
Not really.
That leaves us with your people, Valtert, the Dutch.
My people.
Your people. Dutch.
Yes, Wilhelmina, our beloved queen from a long time ago.
Yes. Many years.
Not that long, but not that long. It was she was our queen during the Second World, which is where her special ability comes from. Radio Oranje, which means Radio Orange, was during the Second World War broadcasted from England. Your trade routes to your own cities provide plus 1 loyalty for the starting city, and trade routes to foreign cities from foreign traders to foreign cities or from foreign cities provide 1 culture. You want a lot of people to get trade routes setting towards you, mm-hmm. which is also part of her agenda. She mm-hmm. likes that when that happens. But plus 1 loyalty, it's not doing really that much for me. It's not that amazing. And I personally prefer domestic trade routes. So, yeah. What is really cool, though, that with the alliance system, if you do have an alliance, economic, cultural, whatever, Plus, there is this diplomacy policy that if you trade with an ally, that it also provides +2 food and +2 production. Your foreign trade routes actually become very viable, and combining that with Radio Orange actually really helps, and that makes it really interesting, which also makes your alliance grow faster again. So it is not the worst. You have the Grote Rivieren, which is Great Rivers. I was kind of underwhelmed with it. Uh-huh. It gives a major adjacency bonus for campuses, theater squares, and industrial zones if next to a river. Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't really come into play that often for me.
It
was for the industrial zones. It was nice. The theater squares was okay, and the campuses usually was still better to not place them at a river unless you were lucky that a river ran through like Paso Mountains or something.
Right, right. I can see that.
The culture bomb when you complete a harbor is also nice, but not that amazingly powerful. You don't end up stealing a lot of territory with it usually, so yeah.
Does it get you any sea resources, maybe?
Yeah, might have been, but those are also tiles that I can just purchase with gold.
Right.
With a culture bomb, you can like really specifically steal tiles from an enemy that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get, and I prefer that much more.
That's a great point there.
The boulders are really, really cool and actually quite powerful as well, and I just really love the look of them. So it's a great unique improvement that you can build with a worker. Just look at that picture, man. It's beautiful, isn't it?
They are great. They're really cool, and they change over time, right?
Yeah, they do, and I really like that feature. Like, the more text you unlock, they actually change and everything like
that's
that.
That's cool.
And they have the Zeve Provincien, the Seven Provinces. It's a unique Renaissance-era unit with combat strength attacking defensible... +7 combat strength when you're attacking defensible districts. So they're really useful for taking coastal cities. Mm. So if you play on an archipelago map or something like that, the Netherlands would become a lot stronger. But on a continent or Pangea map, their Seven Provinces doesn't really do that much.
Right.
The Netherlands aren't as strong as I wanted them to be, but they're okay.
I'm with you, Valter. Make them stronger, in my opinion. You know me, I like any seafaring civilization. So
yeah.
I want to play them, but you know, you being a little underwhelmed, I understand, and it kind of scares me away a little bit. But the ship looks cool. How do you say this again? I don't want to butcher it in front of you.
The Zeven Provincien.
The Zeven Provincien. Looks really cool.
Seven provinces.
Very cool ship. I like it. Rev asks, what do you think about the change to the Founding Fathers ability for American Civ? Ooh.
So all diplomatic policy slots in the current government are converted to wildcard slots. Really powerful. There are a lot of situations where I do not necessarily want to use a diplomacy slot, but I do anyway because I have one. Getting wildcard slot out of it is awesome. It just is a big upgrade. If I want to use the diplomacy card, I can still use it. If I need it for something else, I have that ability to do so. So yeah, it's a really good ability. The Founding Fathers ability wasn't that great beforehand. It just gave you a little bit more legacy, which wasn't that much. So yeah, this is an improvement to America.
Cool. And I think we're at our last one here, right? We're doing the Kree next.
I believe so. And yeah, Kree. And you've played as them as well.
Yes, with Poundmaker here. Very, very cool civilization. Very trade-focused, as we were talking about at the start of the show. So Poundmaker's bonus, his leader bonus, is that all alliance types provide shared visibility. Trade routes grant Poundmaker +1 food in the sending city per camp or pasture in the receiving city. Trade routes grant him 1 gold in the receiving city per camp or pasture in the receiving city. So that's really nice. You get some extra goodies for your trade routes that you're already trying to establish because Poundmaker, as we just said, benefits with their actual Kree's bonus. You get +1 trade route capacity and a free trader with the pottery tech, which means you're starting off the game with a free trade route right out of the gate. That's awesome. And unclaimed tiles within 3 tiles of a Kree city come under Kree control when a trader first moves into them. Which makes it great because, you know, you get some extra borders going on there as well.
Yeah, it's really good. I love it.
And you played as Poundmaker as well, right, Valter?
Yeah, I did.
What did you think of their, I'm going to butcher this, their unique recon unit, the give up. I don't know sure.
It's actually pretty good. They start with one promotion off the bat, which is really useful. Especially if you go for some, you use the policy card that gives your recon units double experience from exploration.
Yep.
So you just want to go around finding all the goodie huts and all the natural wonders, which also helps with your era score. So right off the bat, you probably go towards a golden age because, well, the MechWap you can build really early. You get your unique unit really early, which is a lot of age score. Get a lot of goodie huts, a lot of natural wonders that you're the first to discover. That can all be really, really powerful, and I like them. They're also quite useful for dealing with barbarians even.
Yeah. So the one thing I have to say is playing on the Archipelago map with his unique recon unit upgrade thing, that was a disadvantage. I didn't build one because I didn't need it with my warrior, you know, the default warrior. He was able to scout all the land I needed. So on something that's Pangea or something that, you know, gets you more land, continents map, whatever, I'm sure this unit would be way more productive than how I went about it.
The thing that I really would have wished for is that instead of starting with a warrior, you would actually start with one of these units.
Agreed. That would be really cool because this guy now has to be thrown into your build rotation. So
yeah,
I don't know.
That will make him, but that might actually make it a bit too powerful because you literally start with a scout while everybody else doesn't.
That's a good call.
But I would love that, and I think it fits a little bit as well. But yeah. Can't have everything, I guess.
MechWap, very cool. Plus one production, plus one housing, plus gold for every adjacent luxury resource, plus one food for every two bonus resources, plus one additional food for every adjacent bonus resource. That's with these are as we get further. So basically, it improves over time as you start unlocking. Are these techs or are these civics here?
Civics.
Conversation.
And, civics and tax, actually.
Yeah, because we get so plus one food for every adjacent bonus resource when you get conservation, and then plus one gold for every two luxury adjacent resources with cartography, plus one production and housing with civil service. So it grows over time, and it grows to be a very cool tile upgrade. Really like it. MechWap's awesome.
Yeah, and like we said before when we talked about Shaka, this one provides plus one housing. Well, a farm usually provides a farm provides half a housing. So this really helps you with your housing capacity in your cities, which is a really big limiting factor usually in the beginning of the game. Really, really useful. Actually, a unique improvement I like to build a lot when I play them, and I don't do that often with many cities.
Yeah. Very, very cool. Really like it. MechWap, awesome. That was our pretty quick rundown of all of the new leaders and civs from Rise and Fall. Did we have any that fell through the cracks? Anyone released that we might, and I don't want to tackle it today if so, but was there anyone we missed, Valter, that might have happened between
Let me take
a hiatus?
A quick gander. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure we covered everybody.
Oh, Kumar? Have we ever talked about Kumar? I don't think we did. Was Kumar one that came out in between us?
I don't think so, but might be.
We'll throw that to the listeners. If you guys remember, and if you want us to talk about Kumar, let us know. I don't remember ever talking about
Kumar. No, I'm pretty sure we talked about it because it was Kumar was released at the same time as Indonesia, and I'm pretty sure we discussed both.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I trust Valter more than my own brain. So for what that's worth, we'll just do it like that. So that's going to be our a very, very filled episode for this week. A couple shout outs as we go out the door. I've gotten your emails, everybody, so I really appreciate those. We'll maybe do a shout out to those next week. We've got some topics that came out of that. Reminder to check out the CivCast challenge. You go over to civcast.reddit.com. Our good friend VectorCat over there is leading the February challenge along. So read all the rules. It's sticky at the top of the Reddit. Play along. This one is not a Rise and Fall based CivCast challenge just because we're going to do that next month as everyone gets their hands on it. Community shout out to Paytorb. who has done that Civ Wonder.com. That is the full list of all the wonders in the game. I believe Patriot said they updated it. So there's a little Reddit post they made. You can go and say, he asked if there's anything right or wrong with it, anything missing, et cetera, et cetera.
Did that so quickly as well. The game is out just not that long.
And it's an outstanding site. I mean, let me flash this again quickly on the Twitch stream for everybody. But
oh, yeah, but it's really great.
Blown away by this thing because the filters at the top make it great, so you can really decide, you know, if you're going for a great engineer, what's going to benefit your great engineer, and you can go that way. So he's asking if you see anything that's missing or anything incorrect, just let him know on that Reddit post. So that'd be very, very helpful. It's a fantastic list for anyone that's, you know, new to Civ or, you know, just looking to see what has changed since this new expansion. Go check that out. Personal plug in here. I believe it is going to be tomorrow, and I believe it is going to be 12:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Not confirmed yet, but my friend Steltman and I, who's always on the Twitch streams with me, we are launching our podcast called Path to Partner for those that are looking to get more involved in the Twitch realm. It's basically going to cover live streaming all over the board. So we're just going to talk about news, things that come out about Streamlabs and anything. There's a bunch of useful sites that are good resources. We're going to talk about OBS. We're going to talk about funny stories because you can't go one Civ stream without a funny story in it. So that's going to be a good one. And we have the URLs, pathtopartnerpodcast.com. Takes you back to the main Kyle Dempster Studios website, but it's going to get you the right page where you get the links for it. It's on iTunes and all that with a little brief trailer. So go check that out. Give it some love. Give it some subscriptions and some follows. I think that's all I'm going to say about that one for now. Valter, anything else you think we need to say for this week?
No, looking forward to next week where we will dive deeper into the expansion features, I guess.
Yes.
Our experience with them.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. So next week's going to be a lot of fun. CivCastPodcast.com is all you're going to need to find us. That's going to give you links to the Reddit, to our Discord, to everything under the sun, the iTunes, Android links. So CivCastPodcast.com, lots of love over there. Thank you all for showing up for this week, everyone in the Twitch chat. We really appreciate you guys being there and asking questions. Until next week, everyone, just one more turn. You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit kyledempsterstudios.com.